this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time.
Welcome to Wellness in Dentistry, and today is all about ghouls and goblins. Well, not really. What we're really going to talk about is how scary is it to go it alone in dentistry. I want to introduce my good friend and my co-host, Dr. Kyle Stanley, who is a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher. And I'm Dr. Martin Mendelson, a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, and author. And my first book, One Move Makes All the Difference, is available for pre-order and will be released just about a month from when we release this episode. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. And if you're unfamiliar with us, please check out our respective links, websites, and course offerings on our combined website, wellnessindentistry.com. So, Kyle, how are you doing today? Are you scared with Halloween coming
up? I'm excited for Halloween.
Yeah.
You know, Halloween, having a three-year-old and an eight-year-old is definitely a fun time. They've been talking about their Halloween costumes. I mean, I honestly feel like a week after Halloween, the past year, they've already talked about, oh, I'm going to be this for Halloween. I'm going to be this for Halloween. It is always a fun time. It's always a fun time in dentistry too. I don't, when you were practicing, did your practice dress up?
I remember that. I believe we did. Yeah. But it was, you know, it's always a challenge because you get, you know, you got PPE that you got to deal with. But yes.
We did. Yeah. I love dressing up when I'm doing dentistry. And we had this great costume that I got for me and my assistant this one year that just looked like a bloody butcher apron, basically. Yeah. And so I had this thing that looked like a potato sack with holes cut in it, like very spooky. And I would walk into the consults or the treatment with that, and they would kind of laugh and we'd have a good time. And then, you know, we take that off and put on our jackets or whatever we needed to.
Right.
But it was always a good time. I love Halloween. So any reason to dress up and put on a mask or something is fun for me.
It's super fun.
What do you usually do for Halloween?
You know, for many years, we, for whatever reason, were kind of away on vacation, like right around there. So all kinds of different things. Like, I love, you know, fun group costumes.
Do you guys have kids that come around your area?
We do, yeah. Although it's weird. Like, sometimes we get a lot and sometimes we get next to none. Oftentimes we go down to the neighbors a couple doors down. They're actually both police officers. And we just hang out on the driveway, and it's kind of like a potluck slash trick or treat thing. So it's fun. Yeah.
Fun. It becomes like a community.
Yeah. And then I love to watch the people that miss the sign on our house that says go two doors down. And it's like, hello. We're not
They don't like to read.
It's kind of funny. Kind of funny.
I mean, community is a good transition into what we're talking about today. And that is that doing dentistry alone, going at it alone, is the true frightful thing to do in dentistry, right?
Yeah, totally.
And you and I have, I feel like, always been involved in groups, whether that's working with another dentist or being in study clubs or being in masterminds or being in, you know, other groups. And I still had a hard time.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine how hard it would have been practicing alone. I've actually never practiced alone.
Neither have I. No.
Yeah. And so, but I know, and you and I both know, that we have so many doctors who do practice alone. I mean, the majority of people practice alone. And a lot of what they say is, I feel so alone. I don't feel supported. Even if they do have dental friends, they don't really get past surface discussions.
Yeah, true. True.
It's mostly, hey, are you using Emacs? Or what thickness are your veneers? You know, how deep you place your implants? Have you tried that new guided surgery system? Hey, is this lab good? And there's never really anything past the dentist of who you are. And then when you really want to get to, like, the person of who you are, what you're going through, or how that dentistry impacts you. Is that what you've seen as well?
Yes, and I'll add an element to that, which is I find a lot of times the local gatherings are more superficial than, let's say, when you travel somewhere, because there's this false sense of competition, if you will, in certain communities, and so therefore they don't want to be fully transparent about what's going on or their struggles or whatever. And so when people tend to travel to somewhere, whether it's, Spear or Panky or wherever, they tend to be a little bit more open because they don't feel as exposed, to like their local colleagues.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that because going to so many study clubs, as you and I both have, we see a lot of these local ones, and I really see two extremes, I think. I really see certain study clubs that are so open, so supportive. They build this incredible community and they're there for each other, and they know each other's spouses' names and there's no competition. And then I see the exact opposite, which is what you're saying.
And I'm not saying it's all one or the other. I'm just saying
No.
that the tendency, how about we do it that way? The tendency when it's a more local area is to feel rightfully or erroneously so that you can't be open because of competition, which we all know in very rare circumstances is truly not the case from a numbers perspective. So, and that makes it worse. And then it's like, who do I talk to? And if you went to dental school in the local area and your friends aren't, I don't know, it's just, it becomes this cascade of loneliness and isolation.
I'd love to hear your experience because you were involved with Spear for a decade, and Spear is there as a support system, both as education, but also growing your practice. And I want to get your experience of how do you think that made people feel less alone? Do you feel like when they traveled to Spear, because they weren't competitors in the same city, they could really be open, they can really support each other, and they did support each other?
100%. I mean, people used to call it the Spear Fix, where they had, they felt so rejuvenated by coming to the campus, and a lot of times they would see the same people or similar people, and they loved that as well. And so they ended up gaining all these friends from all over the country or the world, depending. And so yes, they really leaned into that much more than many do in their local study clubs or
Then you think
schools.
it's because their guard was down.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
And I'm interested because someone asked me this the other day. I was talking with someone and they were asking me, do you see a value in study clubs and in state dental associations and national associations? And I said, yes, for sure. And they said, well, why do you think that there's such a downswing in attendance, signups for these kind of associations? And they're a big question, I guess, because that's maybe one of my questions. Why do you think there's a downswing? The second part of that question is, what can we do with these groups to make them more attractive so that people are signing up for them more?
Well, you're kind of preaching to the choir, because that's, excuse me, related to study clubs. That's what I did at Spear for so many years. But let's go to the association thing for a minute. You see all the time on social media and other places, there isn't a feeling of ROI and there isn't a feeling of adequate representation. And, right, wrong, or indifferent, the optics today is that organized dentistry isn't in the camp of the individual practitioner. Whether that's true or not is irrelevant, because perceptions are reality. And so I think that's a huge part of it. People just don't see the need, they don't see the benefit, they don't see the ROI of being involved in organized dentistry, specifically like ADA or something like that. When it comes to study clubs, this is where I get all excited, because this is the thing that I would observe over and over again. The clubs that were engaged, that were there for each other, where the individuals were growing and prospering and wouldn't miss a meeting, are the ones where they had a clear understanding of not just why the club was there, but why they as individuals were there.
And
And
who do you think
when
establishes that? Do you think that is the club establishing that? Or do you
it
think that
comes from the
is,
leader.
yeah.
It comes from the leader, and it's like a practice, setting expectations, structure, and clarity. Like, this is how we do things. Rick Kennedy, may he rest in peace, who was from Oklahoma. He was the first general dentist to start a Speer Study Club when Speer allowed that to occur, because when they first launched, it was only specialists that led.
Yeah.
He requ Now, you know, Rick was an amazing man. He was larger than life, and he required his study club members to go to a workshop on facially generated treatment planning because he felt so strongly that that's one of the primary ways that they were going to communicate with each other on a clinical level. And so, as you might imagine, that was not kept a secret. That was an understanding. There was a structure, there was a clarity. And the people that came to the table for his club were already bought in relative to, I'm going to be engaged. This is what I'm going to do. We're going to go there with Rick. This is going to be great. Blah, 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 blah. So, again, Google's Project Aristotle in motion. We are not unique in dentistry. And so, the same things that motivate human behavior also motivate dentists. Because last time I checked, dentists are humans. So, yeah.
And how do you think we get ROI on these groups? Now, the traditional term of ROI is, I think most people think about money. But I think you get so much more than money. Now, you can get money, right? You gain skills that allow you to make more money. But how do we get dentists, and I think especially young doctors, to say, I'm going to spend money. I'm going to take time out of my busy schedule. I'm already struggling with dental school payments, and I bought a practice and I've got that payment. And, I may have little kids or, my spouse is busy. And now I'm going to take out this Thursday a month to go meet with these people. And I'm paying 2,000 a quarter or a year or whatever it is. How do we make people see the ROI? Because you and I both know the ROI is there.
I
Especially in
think,
study clubs. I honestly don't know about organized dentistry. I have the same feeling that many have.
So what I would say is there's an analogy here, a parallel analogy. And you know what it is, in my opinion? It's patients not seeing the ROI for Occlusal Guard.
So it's a
Because
lack of communication,
it's a
lack of
lack of
understanding.
communication. It's a lack of understanding that you can't put back the enamel you're wearing away.
Yeah.
And so, what's that worth to you? Or what's it worth to you not to wake up with headaches? Or what's it worth to you? You see what I'm saying? So it's a lack of definition of what you're looking for. So if you were to say to a younger dentist who is struggling in their confidence in treatment planning, specifically on, let's say, severe wear cases, because I've seen that over and over again. The fear
Yeah.
around tackling severe wear cases is real, particularly if you're
Yep.
younger. What would it be worth to you to be able to treat these cases with confidence, understand the different wear etiologies, because wear isn't, all wear isn't the same, to then know with confidence the restorations you're going to put in aren't going to fracture? What would that be worth to you? And so that's not necessarily a dollar thing, although it could be, but it's a comfort thing, it's a reduction of stress thing, it's a sleeping at night thing. But
Yeah.
that goes back to one of the things that I instituted at Speer over 10 years ago, which is, when you start a club from scratch or each individual year, why are we here? What do we want to get out of it? How am I going to measure it? And how are we going to keep each other accountable on that trajectory so that at the end of the year, we can say, oh my gosh, this was really valuable because we were able to accomplish X, Y, and Z. That's when the magic happens.
You set the expectation and then you're revisiting it. I mean, it's like, God, the world is all the same thing. It's like
It's true.
the more we talk about this, like what you just laid out with setting the expectation, making periodic check-ins, and then finishing with where have we been and where are we going? That could be with patients, that could be with team members, that could be with kids, that could be with business partners. I mean,
I say this often from the podium, and I really mean it. When I finally woke up one day and thought the obvious, oh my gosh, dentists are people and people are dentists, and dentists are no different than anybody else. So what you need to do, speaking of myself, is to understand those humanistic elements and help other dentists understand those elements as well, because that's where the magic happens. Like, Atomic Habits wasn't written for everybody but dentists. Like, come on. It's written
Right.
for everybody.
So
So.
then how do you think, I know we've kind of been going on this tangent of groups and organized dentistry and stuff, but how do you think these groups can get that message across in a quick conversation in a marketing? Because I'm thinking, people find out about these, let's say, study clubs through a specialist or through their friend who's across the town, right? Because most people, I think, would say, hey, there's a study club, Dr. Smith is putting it on, and they're charging 2,000 a year, and you get all of your CEs and dinners covered, and it's, every second Thursday or something.
I
Now
think
that when they, I feel like that's usually how it's pitched. That is hard to see. I mean, it's not really hard to see the ROI on because so many of these are so cheap compared to how many CEs you're getting. If you just are a CE monster and all you care about is getting CEs for inexpensive prices and getting free dinners, it's still usually worth it.
Totally. I think that there's a couple different ways to go, and regardless of the model, whether it's Sphere, Seattle, et cetera, make it very clear. It's like, look, we're here for each other and we're here for each other's growth. And one of my favorite phrases, education without action is entertainment. And so, we want to make this more than just, a X number a year experience. We want to help you achieve whatever it is you're looking for, because we don't want you to be wasting your time. And so, let's say, for example, you have a series of speakers coming. That's great. What's the thread? What's the arc? What's the intention on the part of the leader relative to why he or she picked these people? Because there's got to be a reason. And so, what's the reason? What's the, almost pitch it or talk to and about it. Let me phrase it that way. Talk to and about it like it's a singular course, like it's a curriculum, right? Where it's like, okay, so this year we're going to be focusing mostly on this, where our objective is to get better at this outcome. And we're also going to pepper in some mindset stuff or accounting stuff or disability insurance or whatever it is to address the other areas of dental practice. And about three quarters of the way through the year, we're going to start planning next year relative to what are our educational learning goals next year, buoying off of what we learned this year. It's not, hey, we're, it's not, build it and they will come kind of thing. It's more like we're building this for this purpose. How does that suit your needs? Because it's not going to be for everybody, right? And I'll tell you something else. Like, when I was developing a lot of this stuff way back, I remember having a meeting with Dr. Spear, and he looked at me and he goes, I love this stuff you're doing. He goes, but you're going to have to remember, there's always people that are going to show up that just want to sit in the corner. And that's got to be okay. And so it can be very frustrating for leaders, regardless of who they are, i.e., restorative or specialist, to have a bunch of people that seem unengaged. Yet at the same time, if we can simply do the best we can with the skills we have at the time and let the chips fall where they may, and as we coaches would say, not get attached to the result, i.e., a specific individual tuning in and turning on, but the rest of the people are, then it takes a lot of stress off of us as well.
I think some of it has to do with ego of dentists too, because you see groups like the AACD, American Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry. I'm speaking at their event in 2026, and you have people lining up to be fellows, be accredited, be, different levels. But I think that's because you get to put these extra letters after your name, or you get to
100%.
market that you're a this or a that or a diplomat or a fellow or whatever of ACD. And so when you have something like that where it's very tangible, there's a very tangible goal, people line up and they pay money and they do all the tests and they submit the cases and all of this. I wish that there was a way to do that for well-being. And maybe we should start it, because you get so many people that will spend all this money on becoming this fellow of this association and the diplomat of this association, and they're falling apart on the inside.
Oh, 100%.
And they don't look into non-clinical stuff until they're at the bottom. I mean, it's like, ask me how I know. I'm one of them. Or was I was one of them, let's say.
Well, and not to point fingers, but the we're dentistry as a whole as a profession perpetuates this because I don't speak on clinical things. I'm very lucky because I've been around for a while. I've made a name for myself. My schedule is very busy. And at the same time, there are so many times where people don't consider bringing me in because I don't talk about clinical stuff. And so we've created our own monster in a lot of ways, despite, claiming to be evidence-based. Yet if you look at the evidence, we're suffering from a mental health perspective. So we as a profession, I'm going to say, are being hypocrites by saying we're evidence-based and yet we're ignoring the evidence.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at some of the new data. Martin and I were just talking about it. 44% of dentists have burnout. 37% of dentists have high emotional exhaustion. 17% of dentists have had suicidal ideation within the last year. That is a astounding statistic. 50% of dentists are struggling mentally. And almost 25% of dentists are likely to leave the profession within 2 years.
I'm curious about something. How do you, or how did they rather, define struggling? Like, what does that mean?
So I have to look back at the study, but there were two things that they mentioned. It was struggling and something else. It was a survey. And this was a survey that was done through the ADA. And so I think there was different ways of defining how you're feeling.
Got
And
it.
struggling was one of the ones that
Got it.
50% of dentists picked.
Got it. Got
Yeah.
it. Okay. Which is says a lot right
Says a
there.
lot. Especially because with any type of survey on negative things, I feel like most of the data are low, meaning that it's hard to have the self-awareness to say, you know what, I really am struggling. And
Well,
I'm gonna put it on this survey.
and unfortunately, there's a lot of distrust of any institution organization these days. And so
Yeah.
I would also believe that people would be like, well, I don't want to answer that I've, had suicidal ideation because, that might
Yeah.
come back to bite me somehow.
Right.
So yeah, I think you're right. I think the data is the data. We have to go with the data, but it's likely that it's worse than it appears.
Yeah, and from this idea of doing dentistry alone can be scary, I know that when I've had some of my most stressful clinical situations, having someone to just emotionally be there with me is everything. I was just thanking one of my friends. His name's Hiri Etasami. He so I my practice is in a medical building, 9 floors, 52 dentists. Okay, mostly dentists. There's a few plastic surgeons, a few other doctors. And I think it was maybe my first or second year of having our practice. So maybe my third or fourth year of practicing. And I did a lot of surgery. I did a lot of wisdom teeth. And I had a young girl, and she, I did 4 wisdom teeth on her, and very pretty girl, maybe 20 years old, something like this. And I did these wisdom teeth. Once you do a bunch of wisdom teeth, most wisdom teeth are pretty darn easy. I mean, 45 minutes, maybe, including sedation, and they're done, right? So I've got her sutured up. She's biting on gauze. We're wheeling her out to the chair, or sorry, on in a wheelchair out to her car. And about maybe 30 minutes after she gets in the car, I get a text from her caretaker. I can't remember. I think maybe her brother or her friend. It was a younger guy too. And he said, she's bleeding a lot. And I said, okay, well, have her bite on the gauze. And it's pretty normal to have oozing of blood for even the next 2 days, right? I said, if it's gushing, then I want to see her. And he said, it's gushing.
Oof.
And I said, bring her back. And she comes up. And first of all, what was kind of surprising was she didn't have a shirt on. She just had a bra on. Because I think it was so covered in blood that they took it off of her. So she comes in, she has a bra on, and which is kind of like, okay. And there's blood everywhere, right?
It's not funny, it's jarring. Talk
And
about
she,
scary. Ha.
right, yeah, talk about scary. And she opens her mouth and she has one of those liver clots. Remember those? And so I'm worried because it's like she almost can't breathe. There's so much blood. So I kind of like take the liver clot like it's a baseball out of her mouth, which of course starts more bleeding, right? And so we're doing gauze, we're doing gauze, we're doing gauze. And it is not stopping. I mean, I'm holding gauze, we're suctioning, right? And finally, I tell one of my assistants, go get Dr. Edasamy. He's an endodontist, by the way, I didn't mention this. And he's maybe four doors down, like 50 feet. And he comes in, he leaves his patient, comes in, and he's like, Hal, just put your finger in the socket. Like, honestly, just hold your finger in the socket for the next 20 minutes. And just him being there physically and emotionally for me, I chilled out because I was nervous.
Well, who wouldn't be? That's scary.
I mean, my
Did
heart
it
was
stop?
pounding, I was nervous, and it worked.
That's
I
amazing.
honestly just like
What's the kid's fable? In the dike or the dam with the.
yes, right, yeah, it's like that. It's like a leak. It's like the remember the guy with the what's it called? Infomercial guy where it's leaking and he takes the tape and puts it
Yes,
on
a
there.
Flex Seal.
Yeah, that was how it felt. But just having another doctor to come in, and he's very calm all the time. And he comes in, hey, Dr. Stanley, oh, it looks like you, first of all, he totally backs me up. Looks like you did a fantastic extraction here. This is very calm in. And so the patient kind of chills out. And within 20 minutes or so, we got it fine. And the patient was fine. She didn't have a negative review or anything like that. She was very thankful, actually, that I was able to see her again. But physically having that person there physically was very reassuring for me. And I've had that experience many times because I practiced with my father for many years. I practiced, even when I was an associate, I always practice, like when I was with a DSO, most of the DSOs had multiple doctors. I remember one time I had a wisdom tooth I couldn't get out. It was Friday afternoon, and there
Of
was a
course
more
it was.
seasoned doctor. And he said, yeah, just have the patient come see me tomorrow. I'm here tomorrow. I'll take it out. And it was like, oh my gosh. I was just.
Yeah, totally.
And this is how it is emotionally for people in dentistry. Going at dentistry alone, it's too hard to do it alone.
And so let's talk then about how do you find somebody to lean on, right? 'Cause I could see people thinking along those lines, right?
Well, I think the best way is to lead with vulnerability yourself.
Fair.
And I also think you need to be ready that there may be some of your colleagues that aren't ready for that.
Correct.
It's
Correct.
kind of like how, I talk about not every patient is right for your practice. Not every doctor is going to be emotionally supportive of you in this time, right?
Well, look what happened with the post that you made about this newer data, and that older dentist came back and basically called everybody a crybaby for, having mental health challenges in one of the most difficult medical professions there is. And so, I don't think he'd be the type of person you would lean on, right?
Yeah,
So.
right. And so I think that's the way. I think the way is leading with vulnerability and feeling out someone else. Now, of course, it's much easier to do that not from, let's say, cold traffic, if we're talking about from a marketing standpoint, but someone you already know, like, and trust, your friend from dental school. If you have a, if you work in a medical building and you have someone else that you see at the bathroom or, in the elevator, I think it's really nice to start that way. Someone that you already have a relationship with. Now, you can make these colleague relationships with people at study clubs, at these associations, at CE courses. We have people that come to our Lightside Live course that Martin and I do that still keep in touch years afterwards. And I think it's because they were both so vulnerable in the course.
100%. And speaking of which, let's tip our hats to our female colleagues that have a whole host of challenges that our male colleagues don't, because of their own responsibilities and societal pressures, et cetera. We actually had a Lightside Live course that was exclusively women, that was at the behest of one of the women that was helping us organize it. And it ended up being a really profound experience for all the women that were there because they have experiences that the male colleagues can't necessarily relate to. And so for our female colleagues, oftentimes they'll feel most comfortable reaching out to a fellow female dentist, although not always. So it's just something to think about.
Yeah, I think lastly, I would say don't be afraid to buy your friends.
What does that mean?
What I mean by that
Oh, you mean I didn't
is
pay you this month? Is that
don't be afraid to pay for a group like this. Like
Oh, yeah.
Martin and I have both been in mastermind groups, which is kind of like buying your friends.
It's true.
I mean, I have a mastermind group that I run that Martin is a part of and a big supporter of called Lightside Live, and it's dentists that are interested in mental health, practice management, personal growth, and none of them knew each other beforehand, but now they're friends and they all know each other's struggles and they're there for it. Now they pay for this group, just like I pay for the mastermind groups that I'm in. I'm in other mastermind groups as well, and so is Martin, speaking groups and this kind of thing. I used to think that paying for your friends, I'm saying that kind of tongue in cheek, but sometimes it can get you in a room with people who really understand you. And are ready to talk about something you want to talk about.
Absolutely. One of the ones that I'm a part of, it's a coaching group, facilitator group, and I'm the only dentist in there at all. And it's been a really life-changing experience. I mean, these people have, really been there for me. I get to bat, ideas off of them and challenges, and because as you often talk about, the biggest challenges that dentists often struggle with isn't necessarily the clinical stuff. And so, like in that example that I just shared, or that situation, a lot of times it's, well, how do I deal with this? Because now they want me to coach all these other people, or how do I create this contract? All that kind of stuff, like the stuff that nobody teaches anybody, right? And so it's been a real benefit to me to be able to lean on, we call ourselves the eggheads, to lean on the other eggies out there, and they're from all walks of life, actually all over the world, because we have one woman from the UK. So,
Nice. So final thoughts on dentistry being scary, doing it alone.
you're not alone. You just think you are. And I will also say that, like you just referenced, not everybody's going to click with everybody else. And so, even if you've tried and failed in the past, I know that there are people out there that can relate to you. And whether you have to buy your friends or you have to potentially reconnect with somebody from dental school that isn't in your local area that you used to feel comfortable with, there are people out there that care about each one of us. And it's just a matter of finding them.
I think I agree with everything you said. I would say, just like anything, put effort into this and you will find a community. And this community can really support you in hard times. And even if you are like, I love dentistry, dentistry is easy, it may not always be easy.
Correct.
And finding someone when you're in a bad place is not where you want to be, because that was kind of where I was. I mean, I was lucky that I had my father and my brother who were built in, they know dentistry, they've been there, I can trust them with anything, but many people don't have that. So it's what we always talk about. It's like preventative medicine, this is like preventative stress support, finding the people before you actually need them. Talking
Totally.
to the patient about the complication before it actually happens. Setting the expectation with the team member so that they know what's going to happen. It's like all this it's preventative medicine, basically.
Totally. Totally.
Well, guys, if this, I loved this episode, by the way.
Yeah, this is
I
fun.
learned a lot. I think it's a very important topic. And if you know colleagues that you think need to hear this, hey, this could even be a way of starting the conversation. If you want to get deeper and have more support from maybe some of your dental colleagues, send them this and say, hey, what do you think about this? This is kind of cool. Maybe we should talk about this kind of stuff. So use Martin and I as a scapegoat. And if you're interested in anything that Martin and I do, we've got online courses individually. Martin's got his book coming out in just a little over a month. And we also do our live course called Lightside Live. The next one's going to be in spring of 2026. All of that is on wellnessanddentistry.com. Just go to the links and you'll see everything there. And we thank you very much for listening to Wellness and Dentistry.
Take care.